Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Yud Bet Amud Bet, right after the Mishnah. Amar Rami Bar Chama, Maishna Cheresh VeChereshet Detakinu Luhu Rabbanon Nisuin. So we saw in the Mishnah there is a rabbinic kiddushin Nisuin associated with the Cheresh and Chereshet, despite the fact that the belief of the Mishnah and the Gemara with regards to a Cheresh and Chereshet is that they're really not completely bnei de'ah. We'll see a little more detail about that later in today's daf. But why should they have the ability to generate kiddushin or nisuin? Because they aren't bnei de'ah. So we say, okay, the rabbanon came along and instituted it for them. But once they did that, how come umayshna de shoteh v'shota delota kinu l'rabbanon nisuin? Once they're doing that already, why didn't they do it also for these other parties? The Mishnah is full of parties that have problems with consummating marriages midoraita. Yet for some of them, the Rabbanan intervened and created a Kiddushim Midrabanan. And for some of them, they didn't. So we know for Cheresh and Chereshet they did, and for Ktana, they did. But for Katan, and for Shota and Shoteh, they did not do that. And the Gemara wants to understand why. Detanya. Shoteh v'Katan shinasu nashim umeitu. And Shoteh and a Katan that married women and then passed away. Nishoteh turot minachalitza uminayibu. Their wives have no shaykhut to chalitza or yibum, even midrabanan, because there is no marriage here. Gemara says, cheresh v'chereshet ikaimo takanto derabonon takinu luhu rabonon nisuin. The cheresh and chereshet who can't preserve a marriage. They could be in a functional marriage. They could have a persisting marriage. Therefore, the chachamim established for them nisuin, the possibility of having a marriage. On the other hand, shoteh v'shotah, the lo kaima takanta de rabbonon, they will not be able to sustain a marriage over a long period of time. De ein adam dar im nachash b'kfifa achat. It's an expression of the Gemara that a person doesn't live in the same basket as a snake. I mean that the plausibility of maintaining such a relationship is very difficult given the ups and downs of the shoteh and the shota in their erratic behavior. And that most likely will lead to a dissolution of this marriage. Therefore, lo tokinu rabbanan nisuin. Therefore, the rabbanan didn't institute nisuin there. They wanted to put in place an institution to rabbanan that would have meaning. That would only happen by chereshet and chereshet where they are stable individuals, just they have the inability to communicate or they're lacking in some way. They can work out between them how to have a sustainable marriage. On the other hand, when you're talking about a shoteh shotah where there's such erratic behavior, then the likelihood of them maintaining that marriage is very low. So then why institute something that really won't survive anyway? So that's the reason the Gemara gives for the differentiation between Cheresh and Chereshet versus Shoteh v'Shotah. Now what about Katan? Umayishna Katan tolo takinu Rabbanan Nisuin. Why did the Rabbanan institute Nisuin for a Katan? V'Cheresh takinu de Rabbanan Nisuin. On the other hand, by Cheresh, they do. Now in the Gemara and the Mishnah as well, Cheresh, Shoteh v'Katan come as a package. So we already explained the differentiation between Shoteh and Cheresh. But what about Cheresh and Katan? Why don't they have the same status? Cheresh, Dolati Lechalal Nisuin, Takinu Rabbanan Nisuin. Cheresh, who will never reach the point where he could have Nisuin Midoraita. Therefore, the Rabbanan created a alternative route, a Kiddushin Nisuin Derabbanan, in order for him to have the ability to get married. Even though it seems that a Cheresh would be Patur Mikol HaMitzvot, and therefore, what's the point of putting him into a marriage? Because, at least according to most Rishonim, the purpose of marriage would be for Peru or Vu, which is the mitzvah which is incumbent upon the man. Here, the Cheresh would be Patur from that mitzvah. Nevertheless, we have a belief, and we've seen this before in the Gemara, that there's also this overarching theme called Leshevet Yitzara, that the world was created in order to be populated, and that even if without the mitzvah Peru or Vu, there's still a more overarching theme, which is we'd like people to reproduce and populate the world. And therefore, maybe there's an impetus for ensuring that the Cheresh and the Chereshet can have a marriage so that Cheresh can procreate, can reproduce, even though he may not be obligated in the mitzvah per se. But Katan, Dati Chlal Nisuin, Lo Tekinu Barabana Nisuin, the Katan who will reach the point where he can marry Midoraita, therefore the Chachamim didn't feel compelled to create a format for him to have Kiddushin or Nisuin prior to that point in time. The Gemara says, V'harek Tana. Then why do they do that by the Ktana? The Ati Chlal Nisuin. She reaches of age at a certain point, so why do the Chachamim establish a framework for a Ktana? Now, we're not talking about when a father marries off the daughter, because that's Deoraita, that's a Torah marriage. We're talking about either if her father had passed away, or she's divorced from that marriage that her father set up. versus Yitumah b'chayav. In those two instances, they instituted kiddushim midrabanan that her mother or brother can do for her. So why do we institute that? She'll be of age in a short period of time as well. That was to protect the girl, in order that they should not treat her like hefker. Problem is that once the husband divorces this girl, what's going to happen to this girl? Now, especially in their time, today it's probably a little different, but in their time for sure, the women necessitated someone who would take care of them or be their guardian. So at first it's the father that's the guardian of the child. Then when he marries off the child, the husband becomes the guardian of the child or the guardian of the woman. You have the same problem even with a widow in these instances, that a widow who's left alone, right, she's in a precarious situation. That's why the Torah over and over again tells us, be careful of the atom v'amanah, take care of them, because they were definitely people within society that were persecuted and not treated well. They were taken advantage of. So here, how do we protect the widow? How do we protect the yatom or yatomah? So one of the ways is to ensure that they get married or they can get married so that they have someone who would, quote unquote, be their protector, would take care of them within the framework of society. So here with the ketana, after she is divorced from her husband, who's going to take care of her? Now, if she has a father, maybe the father will take care of her, and that we'll discuss later in today's daf, that maybe in that instance there is some sort of alternative. But if the father already passed away and she's really a toma, then who's going to take care of her? Who's going to ensure that she's okay? Her mother, her brother? They're not exactly in the best situation either, because they are a widow and a yatom. So we allowed for a new marriage that would carry her over until the point of time where she can fend for herself, supposedly, or get married d'oraita. So this kiddushin nisuin was a framework which the Rabbanan established to protect the girl in order to allow her to be in a situation where she wouldn't be left alone. Okay, maishna ktana d'mema'ana, maishna chereshet d'lo mema'ana. So now, once we have the established that both the ktana and the chereshet have the ability to generate kiddushin nisuin midrabanan, how come the ktana was empowered to divorce, really to annul the marriage through meyun, whereas the chereshet was not offered that opportunity? De'imkein mimnei v'lo nasbilo. The reason is because if you don't do that, people would be dissuaded from marrying her. So obviously the one dissuaded is the chereshet. If you empower the chereshet to annul the marriage, that would dissuade a man from taking her as a wife, because he's at risk that she will dissolve the marriage. Then what about the ktana? Why don't you say the same thing by the ktana, that she would dissolve the marriage, and that would be also a reason not to marry the ktana? Rashi says the answer is because there's a limit to the meyun of the ktana. The ktana will only have the power of meyun until she becomes of age. As soon as she becomes of age, her marriage turns into a marriage d'oraita, whether she needs biyah, whether she needs a new kiddushin. We already discussed that machlok between Rav and Shmuel, but nevertheless, there is a point where her marriage will turn into a marriage d'oraita, and basically what the person marrying her will think is, if I can just get her to that point, I'll be set. So I'll convince her to stay with me at least for that 1 year or 2 years, and then everything will be fine. By the chereshet, it's a permanent situation, it's a permanent status. That means that throughout their married life, she will always have the ability to walk away and annul the marriage. If you do that, then nobody's going to take that type of risk, and that will dissuade people from marrying her. So in order to encourage people to marry her, we took away that ability to annul the marriage. Now, umayshna ktana d'achla b'truma, umayshna chereshet d'lo achla b'truma. How come a ktana that marries a kohen is entitled to truma, truma midrabanan? We saw that earlier in the Masechta. Umayshna chereshet, a chereshet that marries a kohen, d'lo achla b'truma. She's not allowed to partake in truma. She marries a kohen, she obviously can't partake in truma midoraita, neither can the ketana, because they're not married min haTorah. So you can't give them truma midoraita. There would be an iser chiyuv mita bidei shemayim. But with regards to truma midrabanan, here you have marriage midrabanan, truma midrabanan, we can work with that. So by the ketana, they allowed her to eat truma midrabanan. By the chereshet, they did not allow her to eat truma midrabanan. Why is that? Why is there that distinction? All right, the Tanan, we have a Mishnah. Eid Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudguda al chereshet she'siya avia, that a chereshet who her father married her off. So here, that's a marriage midoraita, because the father's empowered to marry off midoraita. She'otza beget, she's allowed to get divorced with a get, through a bill of divorce, because the marriage was deoraita, and the husband, who is a pikeach, can grant her a get, even against her will, and we don't need her dat, and therefore he can grant her a get midoraita, and dissolve the marriage. Val ktana bat Yisrael, she nisei the kohen, she'ochel bit truma. In addition to that, he also testified to the fact that a ktana that marries a kohen, she can eat truma midrabanan. She's married midrabanan, she can eat truma midrabanan. But a chereshet is not entitled to truma midrabanan. Now, how do you know that a chereshet can eat truma midrabanan? There it's never said here. Rashi says that the transition in the edut of Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda is what does it. He was talking about edut about a chereshet, and then he jumps tracks and talks about a ktana. Had he been able to say that a chereshet eats truma, he shouldn't have jumped tracks on that. He should have said that a chereshet also eats truma, and so too a ktana would eat. The fact that he switches the subject from chereshet to ktana shows you that he believes that ktana eats, chereshet doesn't eat. That's the way Rashi learned it. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, Yishmar did dayek midlo tana chereshet behadek ktana. Tosafot, on the other hand, says it's not a contrast to the statement before, because really these are edut. Edut is, he's saying over things that he's heard or the mesorah that he had. So maybe this was the mesorah that he heard. So Tosafot says it's because in that, it doesn't say, v'alak tana bat Yisrael v'chereshet. Shouldn't he say the Kohen Shochla b'truma? It left out chereshet and didn't say it. So therefore we know that a ktana that's married midrabanan does eat truma midrabanan, whereas a chereshet doesn't. And the Gemara wants to know why that is. Gzeira, shema yachil cheresh b'chereshet. Because we are afraid that in a case where you have a cheresh and a chereshet that married, that they would give each other truma, or the cheresh would give the woman truma, where she's not entitled to truma, because he's a cheresh kohen, marrying to a cheresh, it's only midrabanan. Mar says, v'leichol, why not? Let them eat. What's the big deal if the chereshet eats here? Why? Because katan ochel nevelotu. Because they are the equivalent of ktanim, in that they lack dea, therefore they're not culpable for their actions. So at worst over here, what are they doing? They're doing something that is a violation of eating truma. Okay, so they are. Even if it was doraita, forget about the rabbanan. Even if it was doraita, we would not be obligated to stop them from doing it because they are ktanim. They're not people who are culpable for this. We'll get to this in tomorrow's daf about when we do have to stop people from doing yisurim and not stop them. But over here, the assumption being that since they are lacking de'a, therefore they don't have to worry about the fact that they might eat truma. Where it says, no, shir Hashem yachil cheresh bipikechet. Here is our problem. Our problem is that we have a cheresh kohen that marries a woman who is totally normal. Then, that case you have a problem, because the cheresh kohen, who's only married to this woman, midrabanan, is going to give her truma. She is not entitled to truma because she is not married to him, midoraita, but here she's a pikechet. And her being a pikechet means she is culpable for her actions, and then you're at risk. Omar says, v'cheresh bipikechet nami lechol truma derabanan. Alright, so fine, you're right. Midoraita, they shouldn't be able to eat, but at least midrabanan, let them eat it. Zerah dimati lochla bitruma deoraita. That's the problem, because they might come to eat it midoraita. Alright, so now let's think about this. The Gemara here goes through an interesting track, but the track's important because the Gzeira relies on the track. Rashi explains how this works, which is that the Gemara first wants to know why is it that a chereshet isn't entitled to truma. Then the Gemara says it's Gzeira because of cheresh and chereshet. Where it says, cheresh and chereshet, what's the big deal? Let them eat truma, they're not culpable. Where it says, no, it's a problem of cheresh and pikechet. Now, how do you get to cheresh v'pikechet? So that's what Rashi says over here. The gzera of cheresh v'pikechet comes from the problem of cheresh v'chereshet, which is that in a case where if you allow the cheresh and chereshet to eat truma, then people would make the mistake of assuming, therefore, you could also, by a case of cheresh and pikechet, also eat truma. That's what Rashi says, that kula mishum gzera, that everything here is a gzera because we're afraid that a cheresh will feed a pikechet, in the case where a cheresh is not able to entitle her to truma, and a pikechet is culpable for her actions. So that's where the main problem is. But it's built on top of this idea. Mishum techeresh bepikechet, lo michlaf bepikeach bechereshet. Nobody would get mixed up if you had a regular kohen who married a chereshet, that they wouldn't get mixed up with, because those are different marriages. One case is a case where the man is a cheresh, the woman's a pikechet. Over here, it's a man who is a pikeach, and the other one's a chereshet. Aval chereshet eshet cheresh michlefa. In the case where you have a cheresh and a chereshet, Rashi says, there you would get mixed up, becheresheth eshet pikeach. That's where we're afraid of the mix-up. V'hadar michlef cheresh bal pikechet, becheresh bal chereshet. Because in that case, the cheresh who is married to a chereshet will get you mixed up with a cheresh married to a pikechet. So all of these cases here, the problem is that the mix-up is if you allow a cheresh and chereshet to eat truma. Once you've done that, then people extrapolate to other marriages of a cheresh and a chereshet, and that would cause us a problem. Again, with regards to a pikeach and a chereshet, you wouldn't have mixed that up. But as Rashi points out over here, if you just allowed, say you allowed pikeach v'chereshet to eat midrabanan, then you wouldn't get mixed up in the case of cheresh and pikechet. You wouldn't flip it around. Simply because had you empowered a pikeach to feed a chereshet, that would not cause the problem. Because that would be differentiated from a case where you have a cheresh and a pikechet. Nobody would mix those two up because they're backwards. They're the opposite case. The case that you will mix up is when you have a cheresh and chereshet, then we go on to one of the others, then you would get mixed up. If you have just cheresh and chereshet, then I would mix that up with a cheresh and a pikechet. Because their cheresh and cheresh match up, even though the pikechet doesn't, but that might lead to the wrong conclusion. Therefore, the Gemara says, cheresh v'chereshet don't eat shuma, so that cheresh v'pikechet don't eat shuma. Because in cheresh and pikechet, you're going to run into a serious issue. So Gemara says, okay, at least allow them midrabanan to eat. Because if you have a marriage midrabanan, you should be shuma midrabanan. There they say there's a fear of shuma deoraita. Shuma deoraita is a serious problem. She's chayevet mitabidei shemaim if she eats at a pikechet. So again, if the cheresh v'chereshet, if we allow them to eat the rabbanan, okay, big deal. It's rabbanan to rabbanan, it's fine. If they come to eat doraita, also what's the big deal? They're cheresh v'chereshet. They're lav bnei de'ah. It's not a big deal. The problem is that from that will lead to cheresh with pikechet. There's a big risk. There is a risk that if you allowed it to rabbanan, it would come to doraita, and there should be chayevet mita bidei shemayim. So that's the nature of the takanar. The gzera over here was to protect against that situation. Because they won't get mixed up. You won't mix that up with the case of cheresh and pikechet. That's what Rashi is saying. That's too far away. I mean, there you have both parties are the exact opposite. In the case we have one common party, like cheresh and cheresh, then you might think the din is the same. Over there, the pikeach is the cheresh over here, and the pikechet is against the cheresh over there. There we don't think there's going to be a mix-up, because it's mamish, the contrasting case, opposite case. So Rashi thinks that is not something you would extrapolate and say, oh, if that's true here, it'll be true over here. So that's why there the Gemara doesn't focus on it. It focuses on cheresh and chereshet, where you would extrapolate from.
So in the end, we're worried about chereshet, eshet, pikeach, because that could get mixed up with cheresh v'chereshet. And once you have cheresh v'chereshet, that could get mixed up with cheresh bal pikechet, which is the major problem here, and that's the whole gzeira revolves around the problem of a cheresh bal pikechet, but derives or could be mixed up with cheresh v'chereshet, and cheresh v'chereshet could also have been mixed up with pikeach v'chereshet. And so even though in the case of pikeach v'chereshet, or cheresh v'chereshet, the woman is not culpable, and over there he really shouldn't have been gozer, nevertheless, we're gozer in both of those instances because of the possible mix-up that would lead to the case of cheresh bal pikechet, which could get mixed up with cheresh v'chereshet, and cheresh v'chereshet could have been derived or mixed up with the case of pikeach v'chereshet. Even though there's no direct connection between pikeach v'chereshet and cheresh bal pikechet, nevertheless, with the interim, cheresh v'chereshet could get mixed up. Therefore, we took out everything from the picture in this gezerah, and we said no eating of truma whenever there's a chereshet involved because of the case of cheresh bal pikechet.
Now, the question that's asked here both by Rashi and Tosafot is, why don't we say the same thing with the kneg dola? Which is, if you have a isha gdola that is married to a katan, so now what happens? In a case where she was a gadol gdola, her husband would entitle her to truma, and she would eat truma because she's entitled. Over here, she's married to a katan. Katan to a gdola. So now, the problem, you should have the exact same problem you have with a cheresh that marries a pikechet. Katan and cheresh are equal. Pikechet and gdola are equal. Why don't we stop truma in that case? There's a risk here that the katan married to this gdola, she will eat truma. Truma de rabbanan is okay, assuming that their marriage is okay, mid rabbanan, assuming. But, doraita, she is a woman who's of age, who's culpable for actions. She bechayevet mita bidei shemaim she ate shuma. Why do we allow that? Why don't we stop it in that case? So Rashi asks the question and says, about ktana legadol, leka the migzar, mishum gdola lekatan. Ktana legadol, we would not argue because of a case of gdola lekatan, just the same way like you wouldn't argue by pikeach lechereshet, would get mixed up with cheresh lepikechet, because those are opposite cases. Dein lekatan nisuin. Don't worry about it here, because the katan does not have the ability to generate nisuin. That goes back to what we asked before. Tana has nisuin midrabanan. So since she has nisuin midrabanan, we allow her to eat truma midrabanan. That might get mixed up in a case where a katan marries a gdola, where that would be a serious problem if she ate truma. How come we don't worry about it in that case? Because ain't le katan nisuin. Katan doesn't have nisuin. You're not going to get mixed up because a katan is not allowed to marry a gdola. There is no nisuin midrabanan. That's the premise of Rashi's position, which is basically lo shchiach. It's not going to happen because the chachamim did not entitle the katan nisuin. He doesn't have nisuin midrabanan. Therefore, you're not going to find a katan marrying a gdola. If it happens, it's yotzei charig. It's an unusual case, which was not really condoned. And therefore, we're not going to worry about that case. We're not going to stop a katana from eating with a gadol truma because of that case, which is an outlier case. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot, on the other hand, it's probably because of Tosafot Shita. He mentions it here. He mentioned it early in the Masechta that a katan can get married. And it's actually a good idea to marry off a katan, which is the Gemara lauds somebody who marries off their child samuch lepirkan. Samuch lepirkan means before they reach of age, right before they reach of age. Gemara talks about that being positive, so they won't come to Aveira and they will get married early, so on and so forth. So Tosafot believes that there is marriage for a katan. Not only is there marriage for a katan, it might be a mitzvah to marry off a katan. Tosafot said that earlier in the Masechta. And therefore, Tosafot says, we can't use Rashi's reasoning. Rashi's reasoning is, it just doesn't happen. Since there's no nisuin, it never happens. Tosafot says it's a mitzvah. It must be happening. So Tosafot says the reason they were not gozer over here is because it's a finite amount of time. The katan married the gdola will only last for a very short window. Again, if you, according to what Tosafot's saying, they get married samuch lepirkan, especially in that case, but generally, they're not going to, if you're going to marry a katan, it's going to marry a gdola, you're not going to see such a big differential in age, otherwise it won't make so much sense. And therefore, he will be out of the status of katan very shortly. So we're not going to worry about this problem of truma for a very short window. On the other hand, when you're talking about a cheresh v'chereshet, you're talking about a case where the window is a duration. Cheresh married to a pikechet, that's a lifetime problem. So there, they're going to worry about it. So Tosafot says the reason they didn't work gozer by katan to gdola is because of the short time frame. Because Rashi says it's lo shchiach. And again, it might derive from their opinions with regards to the ability of a katan to get married. Rashi seems to think it's not, doesn't work at all. Tosafot even thinks it's a earlier in the Masechta, thinks it's a mitzvah to do it. It might be a good idea for parents to marry off their children when they are very young. And you can see that underlying difference. The Bach and Otei brings that underlying difference in Rashi and Tosafot as to their opinions, why they differentiate the reason why we don't go there, we're not go there by katan. And now the Gemara says, "Umayshnak tana di'it la ktuba." How come the Chachamim in the Nisuim of a katan established that she also gets a ktuba? "Umayshnak chereshet delayt la ktuba." By a chereshet, they did not grant her the right to a ktuba, even though they established Nisuim midir abanan, they did not grant her a ktuba. Because there, Gemara says, "Dimke mimne velo nasbila." Because again, they're trying to encourage people to marry the chereshet, who is not exactly the most appealing wife. So what they do is they take away any impediment to the marriage. The first thing they took away was meyun. No meyun, so therefore the marriage would last. Number two is no ktuba. So now you don't have to pay in. You're not on the hook for a payment when you marry this woman. That's a advantage that she has over other women, is that there is no ktuba. V'ktana minolan de'it lo ktuba. Well, how do you know that a ktana does have a ktuba? D'tnan. Hamima enet. Vashnia, Bailonit, Inlain Ktuba. This again we saw earlier in the Masechta, that someone who performs Meyun annuls the marriage, not entitled to a Ktuba. Shnia L'Arayot, they get married, which is Tofes Midoraita, it's only Midrabanan. These are Shniot L'Arayot, which are only Yisurim Midrabanan. They're also, we penalize the woman because we want the marriage to be dissolved. And therefore we penalize her that she doesn't get a ktuba. The Gemara back there explained why in some cases we penalize the man and sometimes we penalize the woman. Sometimes we force the man to pay the ktuba even though she's really not entitled to it. In other cases we made her lose her ktuba. The idea was to generate discord between them and force the marriage to dissolve. So over here the shniyah does not get ktuba. Vailonit ain't la ktuba. And also in Ailonit, the woman who cannot give birth, was unable to give birth, she's not entitled to ktuba. That's premised on the fact that it was a mekach tahut, that the marriage was built on this mistaken premise that she was able to have children, and therefore it's a mekach ta'ud, and that's why it unwinds it retroactively, because the marriage has no basis, because it violated, I guess, the terms of the agreement that they made between them. Aval, yotza beget, ubiktana, yeshla ktuba. But anybody who gets divorced with a get, or ktana, yeshla ktuba, that's the diyuk you would make. These people are not entitled to ktuba, but the get, someone who gets a divorce through a bill of divorce, or a ktana is entitled to ktuba. So you see that a ktana is entitled to ktuba. On the other hand, chereshet minalan delayt la ktuba. But a chereshet is not entitled to ktuba. Where do you know that from? D'tanya. Cheresh v'shoteh shenas'u pikchot. Cheresh v'shoteh who marry women who are totally normal. Afa pi shenitpakeach ha cheresh. v'nishtafa shoteh, even though later on the cheresh becomes totally fine, nitpakeach, you see the term that they use here, pikeach versus cheresh, you see the Gemara's view of what a cheresh is, the opposite of pikeach is cheresh. Nishtafa means that he becomes of sound mind, clear mind, the shoteh, the one who was not of clear mind or sound mind before. So they're cured from their ailment. Now, ein lahem alayhem klum. At that point in time, the women have no claim against these men. Their marriage was established midirabanan, and therefore there was no entitlement of ktuba. Ratzu lekayman yesh lahem ktuba. But if they stayed from that point forward, if they decide to keep their wives, then their wives are entitled to a ktuba, because now you're continuing with the marriage that is doraita, no longer midirabanan. But the original marriage, which is based on a marriage midirabanan, and it will not entitle them to ktuba. So you see that by cheresh v'shoteh, that they do not have a ktuba. So now, the Gemara only brought a proof. The Gemara was asking, how do you know that a cheresh doesn't get a ktuba? And the Gemara brought a proof from cheresh that you don't get a ktuba. So we'll see in a second how they extrapolate that to chereshet. But the point of the Gemara so far is that even though Chachamim instituted nisuin for a cheresh, nevertheless, they did not institute ktuba. The woman who marries the cheresh is not entitled to a ktuba. On the other hand, by shoteh, there is no nisuin derabanan, so there is no ktuba because there is no institution of marriage at all. That's what we saw earlier. But in either case, there is no ktuba unless they become a marriage doraita. Pikeach, shenasa chereshet o shota. A pikeach, someone of sound mind who marries a chereshet or a shota. Afilu katav la mea mana ktubata kayemet. If they write a ktuba, even for a mea mana, then the ktuba exists. Mipnei, because he was willing to hurt his possessions. We'll see what that means in a second, or damage his possession. Time of the ratza, that's only because he wants to. Halo ratza, if he didn't want to, ain't la, then she's not entitled. Because otherwise then people will not marry this chereshet. Where it says, so in that case, why doesn't the pikechet who gets married to the cheresh, why doesn't she entitled to ktuba? Dimke mimne velo mintzbe? Because then it works the opposite way around. Women want the ktuba to get married. Men don't want the ktuba in order to get married. The obligation of the ktuba sits on the man. If you want to encourage a man to marry a woman, you pull the ktuba from the picture. The other hand, if you want a woman to marry the man, then you give a ktuba because that encourages her to get married. We'll see this in the Gemara Ketubot, that the ktuba was for the protection of the woman. And they had to work through different iterations of how it was set up in order that it really does protect the woman. But if it's established to protect the woman, if you want to encourage people to marry a woman or to have a woman want to marry, you're going to institute ketubah to have it work out. On the other hand, the other way around, if you want to encourage men to marry the women, you'll not have a ketubah. So Gemara says, okay, pikeach tu chereshet. I understand why you don't have a ketubah there, because you want to encourage the men to marry this woman. So therefore, you say no ketubah, and now that's a marriage that has some appeal to it versus other women. On the other hand, when you have the case of a cheresh marrying a pikechet, well, if you want to encourage women to marry this cheresh, then why don't you establish ktubah in order that they will marry this cheresh? Now you just said there's no ktubah for a cheresh. So Gemara's answer is a principle of the Gemara in many places, which is yoter shema ish rotzeh lisa, isha rotzeh l'inaseh. More than a man wants to get married, a woman wants to get married, mean that there's an uneven playing field here. Women have more impetus, are driven to get married naturally. It says an instinctive behavior for a woman to set up a house, to build a family, to be in a family structure. And therefore, you have to give less incentive for the woman to get married versus the man. The man's natural tendency is not to want to get married. The woman's tendency is to get married. So therefore, by men, you want to put in things that encourage marriage. So therefore, in the case of chereshet, we suspend the ktubah in order to encourage the man to get married. In the case of cheresh, women want to get married, and therefore they have enough natural impetus to get married that we don't have to bring in outside stimuli to force them to get married. They're going to get married anyway, and therefore we don't need the ktubah to encourage her to get married. The obligation, no. All right, so the obligations are actually a tanai beit din. They're a condition of beit din. And those obligations exist whether you have a ktubah or not. I mean, they're automatic part of marriage. The Chachamim instituted that will become the binding part of marriage whether or not you have a ktubah. The question, which is along the lines of what you're saying, is Tosfot says it over here, and other Rishonim ask, there's an Isur to maintain a wife without a ktubah. How can you be married? You have to have a ktubah. When you're married, you have to have a ktubah, because there's an Isur to be married and maintain a wife without a ktubah. For exactly these reasons, that we want the obligations to be clear, and we want the woman protected in these situations. If they're married without a ktubah, the woman lacks the protection that she should get from a ktubah. So So we insist that there be a ketubah for the marriage. And Tosfot says over here, what's going on? It says, so what about the fact that the ketubah is there to protect the woman so the guy doesn't just throw her out of the house? Because if he gets mad, he can just throw her out of the house. Divorce, there's no implications to the divorce. It's a matter of saying something. Out! And she has to go. If you have a ketubah, then there's a monetary mitigator which says that if you throw this woman out, you're going to have to pay out the money, and it's going to cost you money to do this. You better think twice before you want to do this. If you don't institute ketubah, you're not protecting that woman who's in the marriage now, and you're not allowed to keep a woman without a ketubah. So Tosfot over here says that the chachamim, in their drive or desire to have the woman get married, they were willing to suspend the protection on the back end. That's basically what Tosfot is saying. That despite the fact that you should have a ketubah to protect her, we suspend it and allow her to get married, period. Because we more want to encourage the marriage than we do want to protect the woman, and it one offsets the other. That's the way Tosfot learns it. Others, like the Rashbah and other Rishonim, speak about the fact that maybe the need for a ketubah or necessity of a ketubah is only in comparison and contrast to other marriages. Which is that if a woman sees that she's in a marriage without a ketubah, and another woman has a ketubah, she's going to get a sense that she's not really in a marriage, that she's being used, and she doesn't have the protections that other women have. Over here by a chereshet, she might not have that perspective with regards to other marriages, and therefore, maybe the ketubah vis-a-vis others is not such a big deal. That's how the Rashbah and other Rishonim say that maybe that's the only time that we require a ketubah, or we say that you can't be married without a ketubah, is when the person's aware of the fact that the lack of ketubah almost makes her into a zonah. Because she's here without any regular protections of marriage. But a chereshet who's not aware of that, maybe there you would not require a ketubah for her in order to give her that sense of being married vis-a-vis other people who are married. So the obligations would be, let's assume that, I mean, the Tanai Beit Din, the obligations would be there, but you're right, but he could get divorced without any real implications. So that's what Tosfot says, that weighing the possibility of someone not marrying her versus not protecting her on the back end, they felt that it was more important that she get married than have the protection on the back end. It's a weighing of issues. If you do protect her on the back end, then you might not get married in the first place. So they weighed those issues and said, better to ever get married. All right, so now, the other thing we had here was that the Chereish can give a ketubah. He's not obligated to give a ketubah, but he can give a ketubah. And if he does give a ketubah, he'll be held to the ketubah that he gives. And the reason the Gemara gave is because, why wouldn't we want Mishra Tzala Zuk Benichazav? He decided that he wanted to damage his own possessions, meaning that he made a decision to lose out. He wasn't obligated to give a ketubah, but of his own volition, he decided to give a ketubah. That's his choice, how he utilizes his possessions. And therefore, we allow him to give a ketubah, even though he's not obligated to give the ketubah. So now, this next story is, how Cheresh Dava B'Shivutei de Rav Malkio. There was this Cheresh that lived in his neighborhood of Rav Malkio. Ansebe Itata. He got him a wife. He married him off. V'katav la arba mea zuzei minichsei. And he had him write a ketubah, 400 zuz, which is a very large ketubah. He had him write a ketubah to the woman, even though he doesn't have to. So Rav Malkio convinces him to give a ketubah, maybe to encourage the woman to marry him, to give this very large ketubah. But why? He wasn't obligated to ketubah. So listen to what Rava says. I'm a Rava, man chakim ke Rav Malkio. How is as wise as Rav Malkio, the Gavra Rabuhu? He's a big Talmud Chacham. V'kasavar, ilu rotzo shifcha l'shamsho milo zavinen le. If he wanted a maidservant to take care of him and to be his company, wouldn't we go out and hire for him on that basis? So, for instance, if you have to get hired help, someone needs help and needs hired help, wouldn't you expend the money to get that hired help to take care of them? So then, why is that any worse than, in a sense, buying a wife? So, koshkein ocha di katarte. Over here, he gets double benefit. He gets a wife, plus he gets someone who will take care of him and be with him, that will be a partner to him and company to him. So Rova's approach to this is that even though the Cheresh is not obligated to give a ketubah, Rav Malkio understood that if he gives her a ketubah, it'll benefit him and it'll be to his benefit. Because in the scenario where we don't get him a wife, we're going to have to pay someone to come in and be his company or take care of him. So why not do it in a way that there's a double benefit? Not only does he get someone who will be his partner and take care of him, but also someone who will be his wife. So wouldn't he expend the money in the situation where it was just a shifcha? So certainly he would be willing to expend the money here. And he can't claim that it was a mechach ta'ut. He can't go ahead afterwards and say, listen, oh, I didn't know I didn't have to give a ketubah. Because if he really said that, you would be able to say, he'd say, I was convinced to give a ketubah when I didn't have to. So why don't we allow him to say that? Because of this logic. this logic that Rav Malkiel basically puts in place, and Rav is explaining, which is that if he would have expended the money anyway on his behalf to do something like this, if we expend it on a wife, then that's just as good as expending it on help. And so therefore, it will stand, the ketubah will stand, even though he didn't know that he didn't have to give a ketubah. Am Rav Chir Ba'ashi Amar Shmuel, Eshet Cheresh, Ein Chayavin Alei Asham Talui. The wife of a Cheresh, there is no Asham Talui. So that means that you could view the marriage of a Cheresh to a woman, which is a marriage midrabanan, in one of two ways. Is it a marriage that is misafek? We're not certain as to whether the Cheresh is able to consummate Doraita, and therefore we don't know. So the Chachamim said, look, it's a marriage, that's it. It is a marriage, even though we're not sure. But does that mean that we're not sure that maybe she's married Doraita, maybe she's not married at all? Or is that we know for certain that there is no marriage here, and the thing is entirely Dirabanan? So what Shmuel basically comes along and says is, not Chayev and Asham Talui. And Asham Talui is a Korban that you bring when you have a safek of violating something that you would bring a Chatat for. So in this instance, if someone has an extramarital affair with this woman, who's married to the Cheresh, she's a Pikechet, now what does he have to do in terms of a Korban? Say it was Bishogeg. So now if this was a normal situation of Shogeg, he'd have to bring a Chatat for having an affair with a woman who was married, Eshadish. On the other hand, here we have a safek. We're not sure if she's Eshadish or not. So in that case, you would bring an Asham Talui to hold you over until you knew for sure. So what Shmuel says is you don't even have to bring an Asham Talui. What does that indicate? There is no marriage whatsoever midoraita. There's not even a safek marriage midoraita over here. And therefore, there's no obligation for Asham Talui. Lema misayile. Let us say that this supports this position of Shmuel. Chamisha lo yitromo. Five people are not entitled to take off Chuma. Vim tarmu, ain't Chuma tan Chuma. And if they do exercise their quote-unquote right to take off Chuma, it doesn't work. Veluhain, Cheresh, Shoteh v'Katan. So here's your threesome that are not considered to be Bnei Deya. Since they're not Bnei Deya, their Chuma doesn't work. Vetoreim et she'enu shelo. Someone takes off Chuma from something that's not theirs without the permission of the Balim, without the permission of the owners. Owners give them permission, they can become Shlichim. But here they did it without the permission of the owners. Vovid kochavim shetram shel Yisrael, or a non-Jew who digs off Shuma for you, afilu b'shut Yisrael, even if he was granted the right to do it, he can't do it. That we learn out from Gamatem. There are the two limudim. Gamatem means gam shluchachem. It's also shliach can do it for you, only if they are granted the right to do it. Atem, ma'atem b'nei brit, af shluchachem b'nei brit. Just like you are a Jew, so too your shliach has to be a Jew. So that precludes these people. So in all these cases, ain't shumato shuma. So here you see that what a cheresh is not considered to be a ben deya or bar dat for the ability to take off chuma. So similarly, in terms of the marriage, we say the same thing. The marriage is not a marriage doraita. It's not like maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Over here, the chuma is not chuma, period, because he doesn't have a status of bar dat. Where it says, Huda Amar Rabbi Elazar. That's a very interesting Gemara, because Shmuel never said this. The Gemara brings a braita and says, you know what, the braita is not really a proof because we have this, he could have held like Rabbi Elazar. But who says he holds like Rabbi Elazar? It's a very interesting Gemara that goes this way. Then the Gemara is going to ask a question on that. So now the Gemara says, who done mark Rabbi Elazar? He could hold like Rabbi Elazar. D'tanya, Rabbi Yitzchak Omer Mishum Rabbi Elazar, Chumat Cheresh Lo Teitzei L'Chulin. When a Cheresh does Chuma, we don't just unwind it. B'nei Shehu Safek. So here we have this other opinion which says that no, Cheresh is not a zero midoraita. It's a Safek. And so the Truma is a Safek, and so to his marriage would also be a Safek. So the Gemara says, maybe Shmuel holds like Rabbi Elazar. Not that Shmuel ever said he held like Rabbi Elazar. Mishnah, Shmuel should really be a proof to his position, and that's the way that he holds. The Gemara all of a sudden says, oh, maybe he doesn't hold like that Mishnah, maybe he holds like Rabbi Elazar. Who says he holds like Rabbi Elazar? But alright, the Gemara is going down that path that he holds like Rabbi Elazar, and therefore, it's a Safek. And nevertheless, if he really holds like Rabbi Elazar, then it's a safek, then why doesn't he bring in a Asham Talui? Then if there's an extramarital affair over here, you have a safek in the woman, and you should really bring in a Asham Talui, because you don't know if you violated an Isur Doraita. Where it says, being a chaticha mishtei chatichot, that you need one piece out of two pieces. This is Gemara and Kretut that we learned in terms of Asham. When it comes to an Asham only is brought, according to one of the Tanaim there, when you have a choice between two things, like Shuman and Chaliv are there. So one piece was Shuman, one was Chaliv, and you thought they were both Shuman, and you ate one of them, and now you don't know which one you ate. In that case, since you had a choice of one out of two, there you bring in Asham Talui. But if it's a single piece of, and you thought it was Shuman, and it turns out it was Chaliv, and there you don't bring, or you're not sure if it was Shuman or Chaliv, there you don't bring in Asham Talui. Because there the Isur is not Kavua. Asham Talui is brought in a case where the Isur is Kavua, and you're just uncertain as to whether you interacted with the Isur or not. Over here, where the object itself, we're not sure if it's Isur, there you don't bring an Hashem Toloi. So this case, the case by the woman, is exactly that. It's not a choice between two women. It's a choice. This woman, is she Doraita or is she not Doraita? That you do not bring an Hashem Toloi for. So that's not being in Chaticha Mishnei Chatichot, and that's not here. When it says, Umi Bai Rabbi Elazar Chaticha Mishnei Chatichot, what about Rabbi Elazar Lishitato? Rabbi Elazar Lishitato does not require that for Hashem Toloi. He says, even if you have a single item that there's a safek about, you bring an Hashem Toloi. The Tavatani Rabbi Elazar Omer Ki Koi Chayavin El Chobo Hashem Toloi. Koi is an animal that's a safek behema, safek chaya. The guards too, fats being a sur, it's only the fats of a behema that are a surim. The fats of a chaya are not a surim. The reason likely being is because a behema goes on the mizbeach, and therefore the fats that would have otherwise gone on the mizbeach now are a surim bechulin. Chaya, which doesn't go on the mizbeach, therefore there is no din of fats or chaylev by the chaya. So now here you have an animal we're uncertain as to whether it is a chaya or behema. So you have safek of the chaylev, that fat, whether it was the fats that are also midoraita or not also midoraita. And Rabbi Loza says about that, bring an Hashem Toloi. That's not a choice between two objects. That's a single object where you have a safek about it. Gemara says, Shmuel Sovel Ke Rabbi Loza Bechado. He holds like Rabbi Loza over the fact that a cheresh is a safek. But he argues on the other principle, which is that you can bring an Hashem Toloi even for a single safek. Only bring a Hashem Toloi when you have two safek. Right? That's the Gemara here. Again, it's a very interesting Gemara because Shmuel never said anything about Rabbi Elazar. He could hold like the Mishnah and Truma, and he'd be totally fine. And the Gemara goes, oh, maybe he doesn't hold like the Mishnah and Truma. Maybe he holds like Rabbi Elazar. Ah, if he holds like Rabbi Elazar, why isn't he bringing Hashem Toloi? Because he holds like Rabbi Elazar in one case and not in the other case. It's an interesting development why the Gemara went this way, trying to establish the position of Rabbi Elazar versus just allowing Shmuel to hold like the Mishnah, which seems to be the pashup shot in his position. V'kadamrei, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi, Amar Rabbi Shmuel, Eshet Cheresh Chayavin Alei Hashem Toloi. So this case, you might need Rabbi Elazar, because here they said you are chayav for Hashem Toloi. So Gemara says, Meitvei chamisha loy trumo, sabalaki Rabbi Elazar. The questioning from the Mishnah in Trumot, which seems to indicate that Cheresh doesn't have any ability to create Truma. That would be against this, because he's saying it's a safek. Now here he says, now sabalaki Rabbi Elazar. Here he holds with Rabbi Elazar. That might be what precipitated in the first case. In this case, you need Rabbi Elazar for Shmuel, otherwise his position won't work. Maybe that's why the Gemara also mentioned it in the first case. So then, in that case, if he holds like Rabbi Elazar, then he would, number one, say that Cheresh is a safek, and number two is he'd say you bring in Hashem Taloi, because Rabbi Elazar believes even when a single person is the Isur, then you can also bring in Hashem Taloi. By Rav Ashi, my time with Rabbi Elazar, what is the reasoning behind Rabbi Elazar's position about a Cheresh? What does he think of a Cheresh? And this is what we asked about before. When you say somebody is sometimes of sound mind, not of sound mind, how do we look at that? Mifshat pshitalei de Cheresh data klishatahu. He's certain that the capabilities, the intellectual capabilities of a cheresh are diminished. Umiyom ispekelei data tziluta, e lav data tziluta. The question he has is that intellectual capability, is that clear and of sound mind? Or is that something that is not of sound mind? I mean, that's the safek here. He has no safek that their intellectual capabilities are compromised. His only question is, in that compromised state, do they have full capacity to use all of that which they have in their state? Or maybe not. That's his safek. Or, ulolam chadadato, who? But he's always in one state of being. He's always in that compromised state of being, which is he's always has compromised intellectual capabilities. Just a question of, can he use all of those faculties or not use all of those faculties? Odilma pshitale didate klishata, v'lav date tzlituta, who? Or maybe he thinks that he is, first of all, he lacks intellectual capabilities. Number two is, he never is of sound mind. When he has these compromised capabilities, he's also compromised in his ability to use those faculties. That the problem is that he goes in and out of this state of being. Sometimes he's in this state of compromised intellectual capabilities, but sometimes he's not. And then he's of clear mind and he could act in that way. So that's the question here. What is the safek? Is it safek of compromised intellectual capability that can be used? Sometimes he can use those faculties, sometimes he can't. Or is when he's in the compromised state, he can't use them at all. But sometimes he has a clear ability to use all of his intellectual capabilities. So Gemara says, the mai nafka mina. What's the difference? Either way, it's a safek, whether he is or isn't, and then you have a safek problem here. So Gemara says, question is, can he divorce the woman? If you say he's always stable in the same state of being, kidu kidushim gam gerushim. Just like he was able to establish kiddushim, then we can assume
When he established Kiddushim, he is doing the same thing when he did the Gerushim. He's in the same state of being. Since he's stable all the time in this lower functioning intellectual capability, and sometimes he's clear mind, not clear mind, we can assume whatever he did with the Kiddushim, that's the same thing he did with the Gerushim. But if you say that sometimes he has full faculties and sometimes he's totally compromised, then you have a problem. He can establish Kiddushin because Mimon of Shach, he established Kiddushin with her. Problem is, then unwinding him, Gerushe lo matzi migarish. But getting divorced, he can't get divorced because he would never know that if whether he established a Kiddushin when he was compromised or he established a Kiddushin when he's of sound mind. And therefore, the Gerushin would be problematic. You have a Kiddushin Doraita, and you're trying to unwind them with Gerushin mi derabanan. Because over here, he doesn't have Gerushin because he's not of sound mind or he's not in his full capabilities at that time. So the only way to unwind it would be to unwind it Doraita. Because of that safek, we won't let you unwind it over here. My, what's the din here? The Gemara says teku. Unresolved as to why the cheresh, according to Rabbi Elazar, is a safek, is that he's stable, but we just don't know how good that intellectual capability is. Or is it that he goes in and out of his ability to know or not know, or his ability to use his intellectual capacities? So that Gemara leaves as a teku. The Kiva Eger asks over here, why can't he get divorced? It should be a sfeik sfeika. It should be a safek whether he was able to establish the marriage in the first place, and a safek whether he can dissolve the marriage in the back half. So it's really a sfeik sfeika. Why can't we say that he can get divorced here because of that? Usually a sfeik sfeika goes to kula, and we should allow him to get divorced because safek whether he even established it doraita in the first place. And number two is a safek whether he was able to unwind it doraita. But sfeik sfeika, he should be able to get out of the problem. So Bekiva Eger over here establishes a principle, which is that sfeik sfeika only applies when the two sfeikot derive at the same moment. That at the moment that the first sfeik is created, so too is the second sfeik. And therefore they're built on top of each other, which is a sfeik sfeika. Over here, the sfeikot are totally separate. There's a sfeik that's generated when he had the kiddushin, and there's a second sfeik that's generated when he grants kiddushin, which is independent of the sfeik that was generated when he had kiddushin. And therefore, that's not considered to be a sfeik sfeika because they were established at different times. They don't derive from the same point of time or same act that generates the sfeik sfeika. Right now, the Gemara says nishtatit. If she loses her mind, Amar Yitzchak, Dvar Torah, Shultam Mitgareshet. The truth is that a woman who loses her mind, you're allowed to divorce her. Midahava Bikechet Bal Korcha. She's no different than a woman of sound mind who gets divorced against her will. A husband can divorce the woman without her acquiescence. Bal Korcha. So just like he can divorce a woman, Bal Korcha, he can divorce a Shota, quote-unquote, Bal Korcha. Bal Korcha, she doesn't know, so he can divorce her. So then why over here do we say that she is not divorced? Why did the Chachamim say no divorce? Because we want someone to be responsible for this Shota. Problem is, if he divorces her, and then he lets her go, people are going to abuse her because she doesn't have the capacity to take care of herself and she won't know better. So therefore we want someone to protect her. How do we keep her protected? We force her to stay in the marriage, that the husband has to continue to take care of her and make sure that she's okay. So hey, chidami, what's the case over here? Ilema do yodat lishmor gitav, yodat lishmor atzma. If she knows how to take care of her get, I mean that she can accept the get, and she knows how to take care of herself, mi hayage ba minag hefker, then the minag hefker is not applicable over here. So if she doesn't know how to keep her own get and doesn't know how to take care of herself, wait a minute, in that case you can't get gerushim. Even in a Torah you can't get gerushim done because you need the woman to accept the get. You need her to have some sort of capability to get her get and have a kinyan on her get so that it works. You have to give it into her hand. That's only someone who has a hand in order to be goresh. Then there's gerushin. But on the other hand, there is, if you don't have a yad, there is no gerushin. Now yad here is not literally yad. Yad here is figuratively. Do they have the halachic ability to accept? Do they have the ability to extend a hand and receive something? What's the qualification? Mishmor gita. Okay, does she know how to keep her get? Does she know how to take care of her get? It means that she won't lose it. She won't, I mean, that the divorce will go through because she's able to accept it and she knows what to do with it. She doesn't just get a get and rip it up. She doesn't get a get and throw it in the garbage. She knows that a get is something that she's supposed to take care of. So in that case, then she has a yad. In that case where she has a yad, she can accept a get. But here, where she doesn't know how to keep her get, she doesn't know how to take care of herself, there is no get here because If you hand her the get, she might rip it up, throw it out. She doesn't know what to do with it. Therefore, there's no doraita. V'tana debei Rabbi Yishmael. In addition to that, we have tana debei Yishmael, v'shulcha mi beito. Misha mishalcha v'eino chozeret. Somebody you send away and doesn't come back. Yatz tazu, shemishalcha v'chozeret. But here, this excludes someone. If you send her away, she just keeps coming back. Wait, the Rishonim say it over here is because she's not bosh, she's not embarrassed. Usually someone who's divorced, they're embarrassed, they're not going to come back to their husband's house. Over here, she lacks that capacity to understand that. And so she just keeps coming back to her husband's house, even though he's basically divorced her or dismissed her from the house. So in that case, there is no ability to generate a get midoraita. So that can't be the situation we're speaking about. One case we said, definitely there is a get doraita, and there's no problem in minhag hefker. The other case is there is no get midoraita, and there's definitely a problem in minhag hefker. So in the case where she can't watch her get and can't take care of herself, no divorce, not midorabanan, not doraita, you can't do anything. And the case where she can take care of herself and a get, then you should be able to give a get, not only midoraita, but even midorabanan, it should go through. So where is this scenario where we say doraita goes through, but midorabanan, they stopped the get and said you have to take care of her? What's that situation? Latzricha, we need it to yodat lishmor gita. She knows how to take care of her get, v'ini yodat lishmor atzma. She has enough capability or understanding that when she gets the get, she takes care of it, and she realizes this is an important document, and this is a divorce. But on the other hand, she doesn't know how to take care of herself. She's not well enough to protect herself or know what to do in these situations. Therefore, Dvar Torah, Shota Midgareshin. In that case, the Gereshin goes through Midoraita, Dayodat Lishmor Gita, because she has the ability to accept the get. Va'omar Rabbanan, but then Rabbanan then intervened and said, Lo Lifka, she will not be divorced, Shelo Inaguba Minag Hefker, in order to protect the woman from being abused or being left out to the public, and then bad things could happen. So in order to protect her, we force the guardian, who is her husband now, to stay her guardian, even though it's a difficult situation. But for the protection of the woman, we say she has to stay married to this man. Again, in the time when you can marry more than one wife, this is not such a big deal, because he can take another wife and he can still take care of this woman. Today, where you have the cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom, it becomes a much more serious issue. If you can't divorce this woman, then this guy is stuck in a position where he can't get married. And this is where the heter meir rabbonim comes in, in order to allow him to divorce her and ensure that she is protected. Today they have facilities where they can protect the woman and take care of her. But then they have the ability again to marry another woman, which is an important aspect over here, because otherwise the man's really left in a difficult position. So now, Amar Abaye, Dekanami, it's Meduyak that this is the case. Diktani Gabi Dido, in the Mishnah it says about her, Nishtatit Lo Yotzi. It says you can't divorce her. The husbands may not divorce her in the Mishnah we just said before. If she turns into a shota in the middle of their marriage, he can't divorce her. But gabi didei, but where he loses his mind during the marriage, lo yotzi olamit. It adds in the word olamit. How come by him it says lo yotzi olamit, and by her it says lo yotzi? Maishna achad tani olamit, maishna atam lo tani olamit, el shmamina, hadoraita, hadorabonon. Difference is, for him, he can't divorce midoraita now. When he loses his mind, they can't get divorced because he doesn't have the capacity, the dot, to give a get. And that's even midoraita. That means lo yotzi olamit, means stuck permanently because you can't give the get midoraita. On the other hand, when it says lo yotzi by her, which is that he is of sound mind, she is not, then technically the get would go through midoraita. Lo yotzi, that's an imposition midorabanan that says don't divorce her. You may not divorce her. It's not lo yotzi olamit that it's a permanent state. It's what the rabbanan imposed. It will become a permanent state because of the rabbanan, but it's not, because that is the status midoraita. Midoraita would have been fine to divorce her. Tosafot over here talks about two important issues. One of them is, what happens if she has a father? Over here, the whole idea of protecting this woman and not allowing her to get divorced is because we're afraid that she's not going to be able to take care of her get and then not take care of herself. What happens if she has a father that's still alive that would take care of her? Can you give a get in that situation? Rashi, in other places, says no, that her father is not entitled to take her get. Once her father marries her off, then her father's out of the picture. And if she gets divorced there, she has to be the one to accept the get, not her father, because her father gets out of the picture at a certain point. Rabbeinu Tam over here disagrees and says, Hainu dafka bein la'av. It's only when she doesn't have a father. But if she has a father, then the father who can take care of the get will also take care of her. And therefore, he could divorce her because she will return to her father's house, and her father's household will protect the woman. So that you accomplish both things. One is that you have someone who can be Shomer Gita. Her father will accept the Gita get on her behalf. And number two is, Loina Guba Mina Gefker, because the father will be, take over as the guardian of this woman. So Tosafot, the Rabbeinu Tam, believes in this situation, you can give a get to a woman where the father will accept the get on her behalf.
And then the divorce will go through midiraita and she'll be protected. The case where he can't do this is where there is no guardian for her, and therefore he becomes the default guardian. The husband is the default guardian, and therefore we want him to stay married so that she has protection.
The second thing that Tosafot discusses, which is also a major discussion amongst the Rishonim, is what's the relationship between Debei Rabbi Yanai and Debei Rabbi Shmuel? Debei Rabbi Yanai said the problem is about Yad, her ability to accept the get. Debei Rabbi Shmuel says it's her ability to leave the husband and stay away from the husband. So are they complementary to each other? Are they arguing on each other? I mean, does Rabbi Yishmael believe if she accepts her get but can't go back, then it's a problem, but Rabbi Yanai would say that's fine because she accepted the get midoraita? I mean, what is the relationship between these two? Tosafot explains it, and then he brings the Yerushalmi, which seems to have different opinions about this, or opposite of our Gemara, and he tries to figure out what is the interaction or interplay between these two different opinions that are brought here in the Gemara. In our Gemara, it seems to me that they're built or complementary to each other, not arguing on each other, but that's not so clear based on the Yerushalmi. Right now, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, which is the next piece of the Mishnah. Ibailo, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, ish pshitale vishakim ibailo. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri in the Mishnah says, what's the difference between a man and a woman? Why is it by a woman who's nitcharsha, a woman who turns into a chereshet, you can't divorce her? A man who turns into cheresh, there is no gerushin. Why does the Mishnah differentiate between a man and a woman? That's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri asks. The Chachamim respond and say, there's a big difference. A woman can be divorced against her will. A man cannot be divorced without dat. He has to have dat in order to grant the divorce. See, by the way, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, ish pshitale, v'yishakam ibaile. He knows for certain that a man cannot divorce without dat, but he wants to know why a woman can be divorced without dat. And why isn't she the same as a man? Or Dilma, ish pshitale. Or maybe to him it's clear that a woman can be divorced without dat. Any question about why a man can't do the same thing as the woman? Which one does he know is the fact, and which one is he questioning here because there's a difference between man and woman? So is it the man that he knows for sure that can't do it, then why is the woman entitled to do it, or the other way around? The woman's entitled, so why isn't the man entitled? Which way is he asking the question? So Tashma, Mikdamruhe, let's look at the answer that they gave him. Ena domea ish, amigaresh li shaham mitgareshet. The man is not like the woman. Shaisha, you'd say the tzona, shalol tzona. A woman can be divorced against her will or with her acquiescence. Vayish eno motzi ela ritzono, but a man can only divorce with his own dat, with his own volition. Shmamina ish kami baile. It's clear there that the premise is that the man is the thing that he is asking about, and that's what they're answering to him. That's the difference. That a man eno motzi ela ritzono. Shmamina ish kami baile. Because the answer is eno dome ish amigares li shami gareshet. So they're saying ish is not like the base which you're arguing with, which is isha. Isha we know, but man is not like woman. So that means that woman he knew what the din was, man he wanted to change the din. They say, no, man is not like woman. So that shows you that his question was regarding the man. So Amar says, Adarabba, mid kamerle. Later on after this, when they bring Rabbi Yochanan in Goda afterwards, they say, af zuka yotzeba. This is very similar to that case, Shmamina, that there they were talking about isha kami baile. There they're asking about a chereshet. Why is the chereshet the same in this situation? Ella, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri l'divrayim kamar lehu. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's question is according to your reasoning. L'didi, keheche de'ish lo matzi migaresh, isha nami lo migarsha. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, I think that there is no divorce here. Not with the, out the dot of the woman, and not without the dot with the man. They both have to have willing and understanding that they are getting divorced. And therefore a cheresh cannot grant a get. And neither will a chereshet be able to accept a get. That's my position. But according to you, you who differentiate, why do you differentiate? What's the logic behind your differentiation? So they said back to me, and they're explaining that this is the difference in our opinion. So it's not a question. Rabbi Yochanan Nuri was very clear on his position. He wants to know, according to you who disagree with my position, why do you make such a differentiation? All right, hey, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda. So this is the next line in the Mishnah. Al chereshet shiyotzia avia. Chereshet that was married off by her father, which means you have a marriage d'oraita. Shiyotzia beget, that he's allowed to divorce her. Because he can't generate a get d'oraita, because she can be divorced against her will. So this is what the Chachamim brought to answer Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that you see here, that a woman can be divorced, mi d'oraita, even though she has the status of chereshet, and she was married off by her father, d'oraita. And then that's what the Chachamim said back to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, av zuk yotzeba. Our case is the same case as that case that was brought by Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda, which is, just like over there, there was a marriage midoraita that can be dissolved, midoraita, even though she's now a chereshet. That shows you that the status of this woman, when she becomes a chereshet, is she is allowed to be divorced in those situations because she does not require dat in order to accept the get. She just has to be able to be lishmor gita. And obviously also lishmor atzma, to take care of herself, so that then there's no institution mechachamim to protect her of minach hefker. So Amar Rav Ami, edut osh Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda, from the testimony of Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda, Amar le'edim, if he says to witnesses, Re'u get zeh shenino tein, you see this piece of paper here, this is a get that I'm about to give to my wife. Vamar la, and then he calls her over and says, Kinsi shtar chov zeh, because take this document, this credit note, Harizu migureshet, when she takes it, she is migureshet. Why? Because we know, Milo Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda lo bein in data. We don't need her acquiescence, we don't need her understanding over here in order for the get to go through. So to Achanami, lo bein in data over here also, we don't need her dat. Gemara says, pshita. What do you mean? Of course. That's pshita. Now, the Gemara's question of pshita, as Tosfot points out over here, cannot be on Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda. Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda just brought a dude. It was Rava who extrapolated something from Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda's position, and that the Gemara is now questioning. Of course, this is an extrapolation of what he would say. So Pshita, why do you need to do this extrapolation, Rava? We would have known that without you. So the fact that he called the document a credit document, maybe by definition he changed it from being a get to an ois get. Maybe he now took away the ability for it to be a get because he now called it something else. Kamash Malon, that's not the case, because Mi'ita the Batle, if he really wanted to nullify and make it that it really wasn't a bill of divorce, then the Edim Ava Kamalu, he would have said to the Edim, this is not really a bill of divorce, I'm just playing with her. Mizalo Amar the Edim, because he didn't say anything to the Edim, and he told the Edim this is a bill of divorce, Lo Batle Velo Mide, therefore he's not reversing his position. But he goes ahead and he pretends that it's a Shtar Chov that he's giving her, that's not because he changed his mind and he doesn't want to get divorced from her. Because he's embarrassed divorcing her. So he does it in a way that's a sort of tricky way or underhanded way so that she doesn't realize she's getting divorced. And he hands her and says, here's this credit document. Then she opens it up later and realizes it was a divorce and now she's divorced. In that case, we say it goes through because we don't require data. But we also don't say that he reversed his position by calling it a shtar chov. Because if he really wanted to reverse it from being a get into a credit document, he would have said something to the edim. But the fact that he told the edim it's a get and never reversed that means that it stays a get and she is divorced. Where it says, "V'ay de kamar hochi machmat kisufo de kamar," and the reason that he didn't say it straight to her and tell her that he was getting divorced is because he's too embarrassed to divorce her straight face to face, look her in the eyes and divorce her. Therefore, he does it in this way that allows him to hide from her and not really realize that she's getting divorced. So that's why he lied about the document and said it was a credit document and not a divorce, but not because he really wanted to undermine the bill of divorce. It was that he left the keys, or the keys fell out of his pocket in the Reshut Rabim. The Bach takes out the Girsa of Shabto. Doesn't really matter when it happened. The question is now, when he needs the keys, it was Shabbat. So the keys fell in the Reshut Rabim, where they were kept in the Reshut Rabim. And now he wants to open up the Beit Midrash or lock it up on Shabbat. But the problem is the keys are in Reshut Rabim. So he can't move the keys in order to lock up the door, open up the Beit Midrash. Out to the command of Rabbi Pedat, he went before Rabbi Dad and said to him, what do I do? Samalei, zil, de bartali vitalia, vilitai luhatam. Go to the youngsters, the young boys and girls, and have them play on Shabbat where the keys are, in the area where the keys are. Because, litai luhatam, de im mishkachalu, maiti lehu. Because if they happen to come across the keys, without us encouraging them, they will come and bring the keys back to you. They'll bring them to the Beit Midrash. So even though we can't ask them to do it, and even though we're not allowed to do it, if the kids happen to be playing there, and while they're playing, they notice these keys and say, we found keys, let's go take them into the Beit Midrash, then it'll be fine. So Alma Kasavar, from here you would conclude that he thinks, Katan ochel nevelot, ein beitim mitzuvim la'afrisho, that a Katan who doesn't have a ra, we're not commanded to stop him from doing an Aveira. So Lema Misayele, let's say that this helps his position. Lo yomar adam lechino kaveli mafteyach, kaveli chotam. A person should not say to a young child, bring me this key, bring me this signet or this stamp. Ela minicho, tolesh, minicho, zorek. But he can leave him if he's pulling it out or he is throwing it. He doesn't have to stop him. So in that case, we allow him to do the violation, even though you know he's doing the violation, even though it's to your benefit, because we're not commanded to stop him from violating the Aveira. What we may not do is encourage him or tell him to do the Aveira. So you may not command him to do something or ask him to do something on your behalf, but if it happens to happen, you don't have to stop him from doing it. And that's what seemingly is coming out of the words of Rabbi Padat, that over here he's allowing the children to play in that area and then bring the keys into Beit Midrash. And we don't have to stop the children from doing that or bringing the keys into Beit Midrash. The Gemara says that also is upheld or substantiated by this statement that a father is not allowed to say to a katan, bring me the key or bring me the chutam. But if he leaves him there and he happens to do it, take something or pull it out or do whatever it is that he needs to do, he doesn't have to stop them. Rabbi, that's not the case. Tolesh, batzit shenu nakuv, zarek, bekarmelit, rabbanan. Maybe that case, the case that we're trying to bring a proof from in Gemara and Shabbat, is not really a proof, because there they're only isurim derabanan. It's a case where you're pulling something out of the ground, in a pot that doesn't have holes, and therefore the oker or akirav, that item is only midrabanan. Or in a case where he's carrying something in a karmelit, which is only a reshut derabanan and only an isur derabanan. So maybe in a case where there is an isur derabanan, we're going to say the father can't instruct the child to violate the derabanan, but if the child does violate the derabanan, he's not obligated to stop him from violating the din derabanan. But on doraita, maybe by doraita he's not allowed to instruct him, and he also has to stop him if he does a violation doraita. So from that, you can't bring a proof to this position of Rabbi Padat, that when you're dealing with the serim doraita, that you're allowed to just look the other way when the katan does something wrong. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Kuyuv Dalim and Aleph, and in tomorrow's Gemara, we're going to discuss this in more detail. When is there an obligation to stop someone from doing a melacha on Shabbat, a katan? And when is there no obligation to stop them? And what is the obligation of both the parents and society vis-a-vis this katan, ochel nevelot, and their chinuch, and stopping them from doing things that are wrong, even though they may not be culpable at that point in time?